once again for Insight with Jack Stogler on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Stogler is being brought to you by the community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's broadcast. Without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Jack Stogler.
Welcome to Insight Without Jack Stogler tonight. Our guest tonight is scheduled to be Steve Stone. He's not here yet, probably out running some business. And we have Rocker here, so we're going to start off with Rocker instead of ending up with Rocker, so you get the best first instead of waiting until the end.
Yeah, we'll get the worst part out of the way first.
No, this is the best part. So, what do you have for us tonight?
Top 10 wrestling... The worst wrestling gimmicks.
Oh.
These are the characters that didn't quite make it.
Oh, yep. So, speaking of that, we have a young man going to state in high school wrestling. That's Jake Meyer. They're going to send him off tomorrow afternoon, starting around 2:30 at the high school. Then they'll go to the elementary school and through downtown about 10 till 3. And he's going to wrestle at the state level, which is incredible. This is our second year of wrestling, I believe. And... you know, he's just we're just getting started. We had a pretty decent second year for having, I think there's 5 wrestlers, and most of the schools have 10, 20 wrestlers, and just getting started. We the kids have a lot of heart, and they're learning a lot of skill and endurance, and it's just really something. But anyway, let's go to wrestling instead of wrestling.
Well, same thing.
Only different. It's a whole lot different if you're watching high school wrestling.
There's no steel chairs involved here.
Almost none. And there's no ropes. There's no ropes you can jump off
of. Or body slams.
Yeah, you can get a body slam if you can do it. I've seen probably 5 or 6 or 7 hours of wrestling this year, and I did see one guy with a takedown, a pretty good takedown, but it was not a body slam. So these are guys that came up with a gimmick for their character, and
didn't quite muster.
Uh-huh.
Now the bottom 10 are 2 guys. It's the same guy.
Oh.
Number 10, Stunning Steve Austin, which of course turned out to be Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yep.
So by the time he got to the WWF, of course they can't, by legal rights, they can't have the same name.
Yep.
He got turned into the Ringmaster.
The Ringmaster.
Hmm. Yeah, that
didn't work so well.
That didn't work.
Huh.
By the time the Attitude Era came aboard, that didn't quite cut it.
Oh, well.
Number 8, the Goon.
The Goon?
Yeah, he was a hockey player.
Oh.
He had a hockey stick, and this is about the time I had tuned out. I mean, after I graduated, I kind of tuned out until about 08, but I'd always peek back in. Well, I missed this period altogether.
Well, good for you. Since I haven't heard of him, I'm going to say he was not spectacular.
No. Number 7, the Glacier. Now, this is an infamous character that they have a build-up for, certain things.
Yeah.
This is like a month-long build-up for this guy, and he was absolutely god-awful. He was a knockoff of one of those fighting games.
Oh, yeah.
And...
So was he a big, fat, white guy?
No, he was a built guy, but they made him out to be this icy street fighter.
Hmm.
And, yeah... Number 7. Now, this one was actually good. Or number 6, I should say. Uncle Elmer. He was sort of like the cousin, the uncle of the Hillbilly Jim.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, he was a big.
Fat guy.
Big guy.
Yep.
But his movability skills was not greatest. So about all he could do was body slam you and land on you.
Well, I guess that's okay as long as you're able to do that to somebody. But
now, imagine Andre the Giant landing on you. Well,
yep.
Sort of like that, only a lot bigger.
Yep, but he still has to finagle around to get it to where, get him down where he can still get him down on the ground and then land on him. So that's not always easy.
Number five. You'll get a kick out of this one. Duke the Dumpster.
Duke the Dumpster.
He would...
So is he trashy?
He would come out of... I kid you not, every week he would come out of a dumpster.
So they wheeled a dumpster into the...
Yeah.
Into the arena.
And
I guess that's...
You almost feel bad for the guy that had to wrestle him.
Yeah. That one's. I don't see. And a lot of times it's the wrestling association that tells them what name they're going to have and what.
Oh yeah, Vince comes up.
I don't know if he does all of that. Maybe they already had something thought up. But that one's not well thought out.
Number four. Now, this is kind of genius, but it. The poor guy who had to play it, of course, he turned out to get a better character, but Dr. Isaac Yankum. He's a dentist, an evil dentist. He went on to play Kane, of course, but now he's the mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee, so.
Well, I guess that's something.
You know who Jerry Lawler is?
Yeah.
This is Jerry Lawler's idea.
Dr. Yankum. Isaac Yankum. He's a dentist. So did he try to act like he was pulling people's teeth in the ring? Or
I think it was just he'd have the Dr. Smock on, but that's about it. Number three. Now, this was the dumbest one. One of the dumbest ones. It's called Oz. It was supposed to be the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Only it was played by Kevin Nash. Now, Kevin Nash is all of 6'7". Now, I don't know how tall the Wizard was in the Wizard of Oz, but...
Yeah, he wasn't 6'7".
No. So this... And they had him all in like a... like Merlin.
Yeah.
But it's all green.
Oh, yep.
So basically, a big, tall guy in green makeup with a dunce cap on.
Well, that's a wizard cap.
Yeah.
But you're probably better description of the dunce, but yeah.
Number two, this is another bad one.
No, but going back to that wizard guy, did he wrestle with that cap on?
No.
Oh, okay, just part of his
cape
and the cap came off when he got ready to wrestle.
Thank God it didn't last long.
Yeah.
Number two, the Gobbledygooker.
The Gobbledygooker.
Now, there again, the build-up. He was inside of an egg for all of a month. He got unleashed at Survivor Series. Now, this is Thanksgiving, mind you. He comes out of an egg. And it's a dancing turkey. Yeah.
Gobbledygook.
Yeah, gobbledygooker. This is the mind of Vince McMahon at work. Yeah,
I guess if you want to make a little money and Vince says, I'll give you money to dress up like a turkey. So did he wrestle in the turkey outfit or did he take that off?
He never wrestled. It was a gimmick.
Oh.
It was a Thanksgiving. I think he only wrestled one time. It's like the Battle Royal. And yeah, he got...
Yeah, got his head chopped off.
Pretty much.
They plucked his feathers and they ate him.
Number one, Bastion Booger.
Whoa. Now... That doesn't sound good at all.
The best way to describe this is a guy in basically a diaper. And the diaper was normal, but the top part that they had for him was like a, how can I say this on air without, I'm trying to clean it up the best I can, but it was like a, one of those biker bar, but it's like, had the, like the, like a, it's like a dominatrix outfit, basically.
Oh, oh.
Only
yeah.
A guy version of it.
And in a diaper.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know what possessed Vince to think that was a good idea.
Because he was out of other ideas.
And they were, I mean, this is just the second time I've done this list. There is plenty more I could come up with.
Wow. Wow. That's some really strange stuff.
There was one that I actually met myself. Was the guy was a hell of a wrestler, but Vince saddled him with the Red Rooster.
Hmm.
So he had Spikey's hair up, oh, paint yeah. it red,
yeah.
and he would cock-a-doodle-do all the way down to the ring.
I guess if they were paying me $150,000, I might do that, but I don't know. That seems a little strange. And you say you met him?
1988, Hair Arena.
Oh.
They have like these half intermissions and kids can go down.
Yeah.
You know. Well, he was the only one that actually showed up.
Oh.
So, yeah, I got saddled with him.
Well, but you got a famous guy's autograph.
Well, thankfully, I made up for it years later when I got the slap hands of Macho Man, so...
Oh, yep. Randy Savage.
That made up for that, at
yep.
least.
Yep. Was that at Hair Arena, too?
No, that was at Jay County. They had the WCW.
Oh, I didn't realize that ever came to Jay County.
That and I... Then we went to Muncie one time, and it was there too.
Oh.
That's the night that my brother almost got in a fight with one of the wrestlers.
Which brother, John?
Rod.
Rod. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. Well, so what was that about?
Well, Rod being Rod tried to pick a fight with Vader, of all people, who he was a big-sized boy. So, about imagine, I'm on the other side of the arena, not knowing what's going on. He almost gets himself crap tunned out of the place, and I had no ride.
So he went and picked a fight with a professional wrestler. Yeah.
Thank God they just shoot him back over here.
Yeah, I guess they... But he didn't get body slammed.
Oh, that'd been fun to watch.
Well, no. What's your brother? How would you get home if he got body slammed? He'd be in the hospital.
Well, but, you know, when you do stupid... I even say, when you start doing stupid stuff,
yeah.
bad things are going to happen.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, there they are.
Yep. So Mr. Stone is in the house, so we're going to take a little break, and we'll come back and talk with Steve. We got Rocker's goofiest gimmicks in wrestling done here. So be back in just a minute.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Brick Street Tavern in downtown Fort Recovery. Open Tuesday through Saturday, Brick Street Tavern serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Their weekday lunch menu changes throughout the week and includes homemade pies and soups. On the weekends, they offer evening steak and chicken dinners. And catering services are also available. For more information, call 419-375-4888.
We thank Brick Street Tavern for supporting the Tribe 107.3. Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Cooper Farms, family-owned and operated since 1938. With locations in Mercer, Dark, Van Wert, and Paulding counties, Cooper Farms produces a wide variety of turkey, ham, and chicken products, along with table eggs and liquid eggs distributed across North America. They're also proud to give back through community initiatives right here in Northwest Ohio. Learn more at cooperfarms.com. Thanks to Cooper Farms for supporting local athletics and the Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from K&L Tractor Sales in Fort Recovery. K&L Tractor Sales is located on State Route 49 South and carries a variety of new and used farm equipment, including tractors, skid steers, hay tools, tillage and harvesting equipment. You'll find brands like Ferris, Kloss, Great Plains, Salford BBI, Artsway, New Holland, and more. They offer parts and service to keep farm and rural equipment running smoothly. You can learn more at kltractorsales.com.
Thank you to K&L Tractor Sales for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio.
The Village of Fort Recovery is having its annual spring cleanup day for our village residents on Saturday, April 25th. They start picking up the items very early that day, so please have your items at the curb by 5 a.m. You'll need to have your small items bundled or boxed, and you can't have items longer than 6 feet long. They cannot pick up tree limbs or yard waste, wet paint cans, tires, railroad ties, bricks, rocks, construction waste, or concrete items of any kind. Appliances and other metal items will be picked up. All mattress, sofa, and chair items will require a tag that can be purchased ahead of time at the village office and will not be picked up without a tag. Get your pickup items ready. Spring cleanup day for village residents will be on Saturday, April 25th, and you'll need to have your items at the curb by 5 a.m. Welcome back to Insight. We are here with Steve Stone. Finally, let's talk about your adventure that you just got back from. Well, oops, I probably better turn your microphone off. There we go.
Now can everybody hear me? There we go. Oh, just one of those days where things don't go according to plan, but it's all right. We have our greenhouses on a system that tracks temperature, and got a call that we had a...
Don't they call that a thermostat?
Well, it calls the house.
Oh.
Or actually called my cell phone and told me that my temperatures were low, so I had to run out and see why my temperatures were low.
Uh-huh.
Because the greenhouses are absolutely full of plants.
Yeah.
And Nikki's been taking care of them. And if I would have killed any of Nikki's plants, she'd have killed me.
Well, why didn't she take care of it then?
Well, I mentioned that somebody needed to go check and she just looked at me. So I'm assuming that was my detail.
So what you should have done is send her up here.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I got her and Carly, both of them kind of let me hang.
Yep. Yeah, they did. But that's okay.
Yeah, everything's good. Got the heat going. Yep. It only got down to 48, so we're good. So, well, I mean, it's going to get a lot colder than that the next few days.
Yeah. But.
Yeah, it's been a... Everything started off quickly this spring because of the really, really unusually warm temperatures. So.
Yeah, so I have a whole bunch of bulb stuff that's been in the ground for a long time. It's popping up. There's stuff a foot high.
Yep.
Surprise lilies are, their foliage is up, and tulips are popping up, and irises are getting green and all that stuff. So this, is that tomorrow night? We're supposed to get down to around 30, whatever. Well, it is. It's one of the days,
if
one
you
of the
look
evenings
at the,
this week.
If you look at the forecast, 30s and high 20s and 30s are no big deal at all.
Okay.
For that type of stuff.
Okay.
If you look into next week.
So that's what I was worried about. I got all this stuff. What about
Monday night? They're calling for a low of 19.
Ooh.
Tuesday night, they're calling for a low of 16. And then Tuesday, it doesn't look like we're going to get above freezing. So there is a cold spell coming starting Monday into Tuesday. And then things are going to moderate after that. You know, the plants are going to tolerate 20s no problem. You know, 16 and 19 degrees are pretty cold. You know, the spring flowering bulbs, like your tulips, daffodils, crocuses, hyacinths, they're certainly not going to be damaged. Now, I have a bunch of crocuses that are blooming.
Yeah, I've had, I walked out there going to look and see what kind of leaf might have popped up, and there's two or three different places where the crocuses.
Yeah, the blooms, unfortunately, are probably going to be short-lived on those plants. They're going to get frosted, but as far damaged from the frost, but as far as the plants themselves just flat out getting harmed, damaged, frozen, die. Absolutely not the case. And when that happens, I always have the questions coming in to me via email, text, phone, whatever, especially with the stuff that's starting to emerge. You know, should I go out and cover it? Should I go out and mulch it? And basically, you're not really, in some cases, actually, you can probably do more harm than good, especially if you're going to put like a heavy mulch across them, your bulbs. I absolutely wouldn't recommend that at all. That's not going to help anything. In fact, that's probably going to hinder their growth and development. So, you know, the best thing to do is
nothing.
Really do nothing. Mother Nature.
I'm good at that.
Mother Nature will take care of it. Again, it might. It could, the tulips probably not, because they're a pretty long ways away from flowering. Daffodils and crocuses and hyacinths are much earlier spring flowering, so there might be a little bit of damage. And when I say damage, the blooms might be abbreviated, they might be a little contorted, or they might be a little you might see some damage in the flowering itself, but as far as overall,
And you're not going to have to dig them up and throw them away and replant.
Oh goodness, no, no, absolutely not. Yep. The foliage is going to come and do its thing after it's done blooming. The foliage is there, and with the spring flowering bulbs, after they're done flowering, whether again it's a, especially the daffodils and the tulips, a lot of homeowners are anxious to after they're done blooming to get rid of the foliage and then mulch or landscape or put other annuals,
because they want flowers instead of foliage,
right? And that,
but that is not what you do.
That is absolutely the wrong thing to do. The bulb puts out a ton of energy to build and create and push the flower out.
Yep.
And after the flower is done blooming, then the foliage is there for photosynthesis to rebuild, restock, fatten up the bulb for the following season. And so you really need to leave that foliage on until it starts to yellow. It'll start to kind of wither and yellow after a number of weeks, maybe a month, and then it's going to, you know, again, go yellow and then eventually go brown. Mm-hmm. Once it starts to yellow, you can remove it. You're not going to hurt anything. If you wait a little bit longer, it's perfectly fine. But you just don't want to immediately come in after they're done blooming and just cut them all back, because they might flower for you the following spring. But again, you're starving the bulb. The bulb needs the sun and the foliage to photosynthesize and build its sugars and starches and all the stuff that it needs to for sustainability and for it to live for next season.
So what about fruit trees and flowering things, if they've kind of come out, or is it still a little early for them? Is that cold stuff gonna?
I think we're safe in that all the trees that I've looked at, like the trees we have at the shop, and I've been really busy out on appointments. I haven't noticed anything except roses that are kind of to the point of breaking dormancy, like the buds are breaking and foliage is coming out. So you still should have time to do your pruning and trimming on your fruit trees. They're not even close to blooming. So the cold that we're going to have early next week is not going to affect those at all.
Okay.
So I think, again, boy, we've had some really warm days.
Yeah.
But we haven't had enough that has pushed the plants far enough that the cold snap that's coming is going to hinder them. And again, obviously, that's going to slow their growth and development down. So it's going to give you a little bit more of a window of opportunity if you haven't pruned them yet to get out there and get the pruning done.
Yeah. So speaking of pruning, what should get pruned in the spring and what shouldn't get pruned in the spring?
Well, from like a fruit tree standpoint, all your fruit trees, apples and cherries and pears, not necessarily peaches, but most of your fruit trees, at, you know, March, end of February, March, early March is the best time to go through and prune those. Thin them, you know, take all the small branches off, take what they call the water sprouts off, which are the ones that kind of grow straight up, perfectly straight up to the sky from the limbs. Those are called water sprouts. You want to take all of those off. And then again, depending on the age of the tree and the shape of the tree, you want to, especially on the fruit trees, you want the canopies to kind of look like a open in the middle. You don't want a real strong central leader, you want the canopy to be open like a vase, kind of a shape. That way you get sunlight down into the canopy so the fruit will ripen more easily, and you want to keep the branch density light so you get sunlight down into the tree and you also get air movement down through the tree, because lack of sunlight will cause fruit to ripen unevenly. The real dense foliage and dense branching also is a huge problem with lack of airflow, so then you get disease issues, whether it's powdery mildew or a scab, and there's a lot of different things that will affect them. But having and the canopies be very open is important to even fruit production. Also, depending on the size and variety of tree, thinning them out will decrease the fruit production, but it left completely unpruned, you can get so much fruit in the tree that they'll, damage. You'll have branches break and create a lot more issues, that way. But pruning and trimming on your fruit trees, this is the time of year to do it, and the window's closing very rapidly. Any of your other, like landscape pruning, I wouldn't do anything at this point. Crabapples, service berries, red buds, forsythias, all those plants that are spring, lilacs that are spring flowering, are getting ready to bloom. So you're not going to kill the plant if you prune it. It's going to be fine, but you're trimming off all the blooms.
Yeah.
So you'll have, you can go through and trim a crabapple or trim a forsythia or trim a lilac this spring, like right now, and then you literally may have no flowers at all in the springtime. And then if you wonder why, it's because you trimmed them all off and threw them in the trash. So all that stuff, the best time to prune all that spring flowering stuff, I would say, kind of, Mother Nature doesn't go by calendars, but I would say Memorial Day or after would be the time frame for that type of pruning, because at that point, again, the plants that I had mentioned, lilacs, service berries, crab apples, they're all going to be past blooming at that point. So that's the best time to trim.
Yep. Let's take a little break. We'll come back and talk some more with Steve Stone, and we'll be back in just a minute after this.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Klingshern & Sons Trucking in Burkittsville. For over 50 years, Klingshern & Sons Trucking has been providing a safe workplace for their employees and maintains integrity, fairness, and honesty with their customers and business partners. With their dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers, they provide local and long-haul transportation with on-time delivery. Learn more online about Klingshern & Sons and their employment opportunities at klingshernandsons.com. Their phone number is 937-338-5000.
We thank Klingshern & Sons Trucking for supporting the Tribe 107.3.
Tonight's Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3 is supported by Hull Brothers Case IH, serving farmers and families for more than 125 years. Located in Fort Recovery, Hull Brothers offers new and used tractors from Case IH and Kubota, plus parts and service to keep your equipment running strong. They also carry mowers and outdoor gear from Grasshopper, Cub Cadet, and Toro. Learn more at hullbros.com or call 419-375-2827. Thanks to Hull Brothers for supporting Fort Recovery Athletics and today's broadcast on the Tribe.
Hey. Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Miracle Lanes in Fort Recovery, offering bowling, family fun, and a place for the community to gather. Hey, Harry Carey, tell us more.
Hey, they've got lanes for parties and celebrations and open bowling on the weekend. In the kitchen, it's wings, pizzas, sandwiches, wraps, and subs. Plus a pizza wing and salad bar buffet every Friday at lunch. For more information, the number's 419-375-4274.
We thank Miracle Lanes in Fort Recovery for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
All during Lent, the Wendoline Sports Club will again be having their popular all-you-can-eat fish fry every Friday night from 4:30 to 7:30. Along with their famous freshly cooked fish, they have French fries, salad, and several other great side dishes. Bring the whole family. Come early, stay late. Meet your friends at the Wendoline Sports Club every Friday evening during Lent for their all-you-can-eat fish fry. Great food, great company. Wendoline Sports Club's fish fry every Friday during Lent from 4:30 to 7:30.
Welcome back to Insight. Steve Stone with us tonight. And so we before the break, we were talking about pruning on kind of the fruit trees, that type of thing. What about my climbing roses on that that awesome trellis, I guess you'd call it, or whatever it was you guys built in my backyard?
Rose arbor.
Rose arbor, yes, that's right. And it is awesome.
The climbing roses, I mean, roses in general, I did a rose arbor. Actually, I did a rose arbor because last year you showed me the picture of how beautiful yours turned out. As the roses have gotten so freaking huge.
Yeah.
And I just got it in my head. It's like, I asked Nikki, I said, we need to have some climbing roses. And she said, yeah. So anyhow, I built something similar beside my pool is what you've got. And I bought a whole bunch of David Austin roses, which is a specific variety. And I got different varieties of climbers. So I was out inspecting my climbing roses, and I've just had them for one season. And I was absolutely, last summer, flabbergasted at the growth rate I had. I got them in bare root about this time of year last year. Started them in the greenhouse, and they were, you know, 6-8 inches tall, whatever. And I got 3 or 4 of them that I would say by fall last year were pushing 10 foot, maybe 8 to 10 foot.
Yeah.
Growth rate was out of this world. And I'm like, oh man, that's exciting, because next year they're going to be even bigger. Well, then you have one of the hardest winters we've had probably in the last 20 years with temperatures and wind, and the roses don't care for either one. So I looked at them this spring, and I was going to get around to pruning them last night when it was so warm, but I never got to it. But they died back significantly.
I haven't looked at mine for a couple of weeks, but there was virtually no buds when it seemed like there should have been some.
As warm as it's been this time of year with your roses, whether it's a climber or a hybrid tea or even, you know, knockout roses, shrub roses, whatever, at this point in the spring or late winter or whatever you want to call it, the roses are going to show you very obviously on the stems, canes, branches, whatever you want to call them, what's dead and what's alive. The tissue that's alive is going to be just as bright lime green. I mean, they don't have leaves on them just yet, but the canes are just going to be absolutely neon bright green, so you know that tissue's alive.
Yeah.
And then the tissue that's dead, that's died back, is, I mean, it's literally stark, dark brown, like a chocolate brown color. And so you should be able to come in to all those roses and come in maybe an inch below where the brown and the green kind of meet, go down into the green about an inch and make your cuts there. Mm-hmm. And then because the tissue that's completely brown is completely dead, it's not going to put out leaves. Don't waste your time and don't pray and do the rosary and hope that it's not going to come back.
Yeah.
So trim that and get rid of all that dead tissue, and then the roses will be ready to go.
Yeah. And so now mine shoot off lots and lots of brand new canes. Mm-hmm. Do I want to save some of those new ones? Do I want to cut a bunch of them off? Do I want to cut the old ones off?
I mean, if it's
a combination of all of that.
If it's alive, if the tissue's alive and actively growing and it's green and looks healthy, I wouldn't trim it out. I mean, I would trim back again everything that's dead. You know, there might be some branches that, you know, on your trellis that are a little wiry that might shoot out and hang out in the yard and whack you in the head when you mow.
They definitely do that.
You know, those,
and they'll do that in a week. They'll be they'll be just sitting there, and then all of a sudden there's all this, like I guess Albert Einstein's hair. It's just just and everywhere.
And with a warm, you know, damp or warm wet spring, you know, again, they'll have a tremendous growth rate. I mean, there's certain, you know, some of those I would trim back, trim off, and get rid of. But I mean,
and a lot of times I just take them, get my leather gloves, and stick them back through the arbor.
Weave them through. I did the same thing. I actually had some fun this last summer with, again, the same thing you talked about. It seemed like it only took a week or two, and then you go out there, and they're just everywhere. The branches are just everywhere. So, again, you get your gloves on, and you kind of try to weave them to keep them on the trellis themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's some of them that are just at the wrong angle that, you know, you just simply have to get rid of. But as far as doing a real significant, you know, reduction in size or significant pruning, I wouldn't do that. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can look at nowadays on the internet, and you know, all the different websites and stuff you can go to might tell you something different. But I always wait till spring on roses. There's certain people and certain programs that'll tell you to do some pruning in the fall. And if you have had success doing that, I'm not going to tell you not to, but I do all that pruning on the roses and hydrangeas and, you know, clematis. And that's something I do in the spring, because at that point, again, you can see what tissue, you know, croaked and is dead, and you're making a lot more selective cuts on your pruning versus just kind of randomly going in the fall and just whacking everything back. But yeah, mine, like I said, a couple of them I'd say died back by 2/3, which was disappointing because they were so beautiful last summer and so big. But you know, again, January was December through January was pretty rough.
Yeah, but you know, they went from last year six or eight inches to 10 feet.
So that'll happen
again if the weather isn't terrible.
Yeah, the trade-off, the one thing good about the temperatures we had in January, specifically bagworms, which have been a nuisance for us for years in this part of the state. Bagworms are notorious for just ravaging through all different types of evergreens, whether it's an arborvitae, spruce, pine, whatever. Junipers, they seem to really like. They're fairly sensitive to cold, and they overwinter in an egg form in a cocoon on your plants from one fall to the next spring, and they are pretty sensitive to cold, and we've had a string of really mild winters, and so I'm hoping, and the population seems like it every season it gets a little worse and you see more damage and more damage. Yeah. And I'm hoping the good thing that comes out of this real cold January spell that we had, that, you know, maybe some of those eggs and some of those insects croaked.
Yeah.
And they're not going to, so the generation this next season, as it hatches, they hatch usually around Memorial Day. Hopefully that population is going to be dramatically less because of the cold.
Yeah. Now, if I remember from previous years, you talking about bagworms, those are the things you take off and you burn them?
Yeah, the bagworms
are... If you
are,
just kind of stomp on them, that just opens up the cocoon.
No, right? the bagworms are an insect that they make a... And what... How they kind of disguise themselves is you see them on evergreens and they look like a little pine cone hanging off the branches. So if you're not paying a lot of attention, if it's a juniper or pine or something, you just think it's a little pine cone, and it's actually a cocoon. And each one of those cocoons, those bags, can have anywhere between like 400 and 1,000 eggs in one bag. So the population can escalate at an unbelievably rapid pace. And when people seem to notice that the bags, when they turn brown, is usually after Labor Day and in the fall. And at that point, they're knitted up real tight inside those cocoons, and you cannot get an insecticide to them. No matter what kind of insecticide you put on and how heavy you put it on and how concentrated you put it on, you're not going to be able to kill it. So you can eradicate them. And again, it depends on how big your plant is or how tall your stepladder is. You simply have to remove them. And you can have success if you put them on a concrete or asphalt driveway and stomp on them. You will kill the females in there. Not that anybody cares about entomology that much, but the female's in there and she's dead, but she's full of eggs. And so when you step on them, it's pretty gross. I mean, they kind of explode in a greenish slime, and that's the eggs and stuff. And or burn them, or you know, get them off your property if you don't like your next door neighbor. Throw them in their backyard. But even taking them off,
I really hope that your neighbors don't get bagworms. because we have a confession right here.
But they just taking them off and throwing them on the ground doesn't kill the insect or kill the eggs, they'll still hatch in the spring.
Yeah.
And so I had a professor that, an entomology professor that grabbed a handful of them and told the story, grabbed a handful of them and like threw them on his windowsill in his office. And come springtime, actually, it wasn't springtime because it was warm, obviously, in his office. He just came to work one day, and there was like little tiny bagworm. They're like worms when they're a little tiny caterpillar. They're ugly little critters. And he said, I came to work one day, and they were hanging off my computer, and they were on my keyboard, and they were on my lights, and then on my desk, and my pencils, and everything. It was the grossest thing I've ever seen. And it's like, well, probably shouldn't have brought those in and threw them on your desk.
Yeah, probably shouldn't have.
But again, the point being, you can't just like drop them or dispose of them, or God forbid, you know, throw them in your compost pile or something like that, because they'll hatch when the weather's.
Yeah, you have to destroy them.
Right. You have to stomp on them, you know, throw them in a garbage, you know, then have the garbage get picked up, and then they go to Jay County now?
Wherever they go.
It's Jay County landfill's problem.
I'm guessing a landfill. Those kind of things, that doesn't hurt the landfill at all.
They'll get destroyed at some point. But again, you know, burning them actually is a viable way of getting rid of them. But again, you know, just people pulling them and then, you know, dropping them on the ground is a pretty bad idea.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it doesn't kill the insect.
Yep. All right. Let's take another break here. We'll come back and talk some more stuff, and we can probably go, what, 5-6 more hours, Steve?
At least.
Back in,
do we have sports talk tonight?
Supposed to, yes. Okay. They may be canceled if we get enough, if we get excited enough about spring stuff.
That's right.
Back in just a minute.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Recovery Insurance Agency Incorporated. As an independent agency, Fort Recovery Insurance works with providers like Buckeye State Mutual, Nationwide, Progressive, Indiana Farmers, Donegal, Ohio Mutual, Acuity, Safeco, and Hagerty, offering insurance options for vehicles, homes, farms, life, and health. We thank Fort Recovery Insurance Agency for supporting the Tribe 107.3 WFRC LP.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Reasoner Energy Products in Coldwater, installing and servicing products from Train HVAC, Generac Generators, and Mitsubishi Electric Ductless Systems. Reasoner Energy Products is proud to support community growth through quality service and local commitment. Learn more by visiting their location at 445 Hardin Street in Coldwater, or online at ReasonerEnergyProducts.com. Their phone number is 419-678-4858.
We thank Reasoner Energy Products for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Wendell's Barbecue at the St. Joe store.
Wendell's Barbecue is open Tuesday through Saturday and serves pizzas, gourmet burgers, smoked brisket, pulled pork creations, and hand-cut fries cooked in beef tallow. Wendell's also features daily food specials, offers catering for events of all sizes, and operates a mobile food truck that appears at locations around the area. Find more on the Facebook page or call 419-375-4074.
We thank Wendell's Barbecue at St. Joe for supporting community radio on the Tribe 107.3 WFRC LP. The Fort Recovery Cy Iota Zai's community garage sales will be held April 16th, 17th, and 18th this year. Registration for garage sales is open until Wednesday, March 25th. To register your garage sale and get your sale on their map, be sure to get your registration form from any Cy Iota Zai member or go to their Facebook page, Fort Recovery Community Garage Sales, and download the form from your computer. Registration fees are used for advertising the sale and printing the maps. All proceeds are used for community projects and improvements. Again, Fort Recovery's community garage sales will be held April 16th through the 18th. Be sure to get your sale on the list.
Welcome back to Insight. We're talking with Steve Stone about spring stuff. So we talked a little about pruning and talked about the bagworms and talked about this, that, and the other thing. Is there anything that we talked about you want to wrap up? And then what do you want to talk about next?
Well, of course, this time of year, I mean, I was really out almost to the point, which after today and the next 4 or 5 days will eliminate that. But I mean, I was just about to the point to, you know, dust off the lawnmower because the grass was greening up really quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lawns, again, took a little bit of a a little bit of a beating with the cold, and it, and when I say that, not necessarily cold because of, say, like snow plowing and snow moving and stuff. Mm. There's lots of places where there might have been great big piles of snow, and that turf is matted, you know, really tightly down. So thatching your yard, like right now, running a thatcher through it is a really good idea. Or if you just have some specific areas where there were some really deep piles of snow, you might take a metal, like a leaf rake, and kind of try to loosen that up, because when that's matted for as long as it was, can create some problems with, you know, again, airflow, water percolating through the soil. So loosening that up or raking that up, thatching, can make a huge difference. Fertilization, you know, spring fertilizer is a good idea if your lawn was, and we had two fairly significantly droughty falls in a row. And so we're certainly not, I don't think at this point we may be getting back close to like a net zero, but going into last fall, I mean, we were 5 inches-ish, yeah, maybe 6 below normal for the season. So we were really in kind of a drought stress type of a situation for turf and for plants. You know, obviously this, the snow makes a little bit of difference, but it doesn't make a huge difference. It doesn't make a big impact on your precipitation deficit from one year to the next. And so we were still thin as far as moisture goes coming into the spring. So fertilizing your lawn to promote, you know, growth, density is a wonderful idea. We are, you know, it, you know, the 11th of March, we're kind of right in that window for putting your pre-emergent crabgrass control on. If you're going to spend the time to put a fertilizer on, in my recommendation, you should probably think about putting a pre-emergent herbicide down as well. The pre-emergent that you would put down is usually, you know, encapsulated in your fertilizer, and you apply it, and you will give your lawn protection from annual grassy weeds that are going to come up once the soil temperatures reach a consistent 56 to 58 degrees. Mm-hmm. Crabgrass, foxtail, your annual grassy weeds are going to germinate and grow. If you have that protection down, that herbicide down, it doesn't allow that to germinate. So it doesn't harm your grass. It inhibits the seed from germinating that's there from last season with your grassy weeds. So that's a great idea to get that down, unless you have areas in your lawn that you want to overseed, spot seed, or if you're seeding anything with turf seed, you have to keep the pre-emergent away from those areas, because if you just evenly spread your pre-emergent and then go in and say, oh, I've got a, you know, a big bare spot over here where the snow plow peeled up a chunk of grass, and I'm going to throw a handful of seed down. Well, don't waste your time, because you've already put the pre-emergent down.
That's going to kill anything. It's going to kill any of the seed.
The pre-emergent's dumb. It doesn't know the difference between crabgrass and bluegrass.
Yeah.
And so it's going to inhibit any of that from coming up. Now that you say that, there are new herbicides out on the market that actually do distinguish. Oh. But they're really, really, really expensive.
Yeah.
And they're not, I don't want to say they're not readily available. They are readily available on the market, but they're relatively new, and I can't remember. I was in some classes in Columbus last month, and I can't remember all the new stuff that's coming out, but I know there is a smart herbicide that you can use that will distinguish between the bluegrass and your crabgrass. But again, 99.9% of what you're going to buy at the hardware stores and the box stores and the garden, yeah, centers is going to be the Dimension, the typical stuff that, yeah, you know, doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
So you just want to be careful if there's areas that you need to reseed, you know, keep the pre-emergent away from there. Otherwise, if the lawn overall looks pretty healthy, then apply the fertilizer and apply the pre-emergent, and then you're going to have, you know, good feed or food for the grass to take off and thrive through the cool spring months, and then you're going to, you know, have a herbicide down to keep the crabgrass from getting taking over, you know, in July and August.
So what about weeds and stuff in your landscaping? Is like if you'd be spraying Roundup or something like that, I mean, or is there something you can use to throw in your landscaping that'll kill the weeds that are coming up now? Or
our maintenance programs with our landscape clients that we take care of, we're out right now putting down pre-emergent in the landscape beds. And the over-the-counter stuff that you can buy is called Preen. Preen works very well. We use a more of a commercial grade material. Yeah. It's called Snapshot. Does the same thing, basically. I mean, it is the same thing. Ours is restricted use. The over-the-counter, our potency is a little bit different than what over-the-counter is. Right. But anyhow, it functions the same. And pre-emergents are great. People don't use them enough in landscape beds, but people will immediately get irritated with pre-emergent because they might see a thistle or a dandelion or a plantain from, or clover from last season, and they sprinkle this granular on, and then they come out in 2 weeks and like, well, that weed didn't die. Well, the pre-emergent, again, works exactly like the pre-emergent in your lawn, in that it inhibits weeds from growing from seed.
Yeah.
And there's tons of seeds in your mulch and your dirt from last season. You didn't see them. You can't see them.
Yeah.
But they are going to germinate. They are going to grow, and they are going to be a pain in the rear end at some point in May, June, July. So the pre-emergent is going to inhibit a ton of weeds growing in your lawn, but you can't sprinkle it over top of a perennial weed, which is a dandelion, clover, thistle, whatever, that's already got a established root system and foliage. It's not going to kill that.
Yep.
It's going to do nothing for it. Now, if that dandelion, if you don't pull it and it goes to seed and has the puffball and the seeds hit the ground, then your pre-emergent is going to inhibit those from growing.
Yeah.
But it's not going to kill the perennial weed. So at that point, you need to either, you know, physically remove the weed, or again, you can use a post-emerge like Roundup, 2,4-D, whatever, broadleaf post-emerge, and spot treat those. And I hesitate to tell people to do that right now, because when the temperatures are as cold as they have been, and a lot of up and down temperatures, cool at night, you know, we have had some really warm days, but going into the next 5 days, it's going to be relatively cool. Your post-emerge, like a Roundup spray, it probably isn't going to give you satisfactory control. It's not going to be worth the headache of going out there and trying to treat, I don't think, because if the plants aren't actively growing and doing their thing, they're not going to absorb that as well. And so you're going to be limited in your control. So wait till it warms up and stays consistently warm, and then go out and spot treat the weeds in your landscape beds, and you're going to have a lot better success.
Yep. So, okay, let's take another break, and we'll come back and maybe talk about some more stuff, wrap some things up from Mr. Stone, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes with Steve Stone.
Boars Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Boars, or Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Boars Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Boars Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Site Fuel in Fort Recovery. Right on the corner of Fort Site Street and State Route 49, Fort Site Fuel is your local stop for top-tier gasoline and ultra-low sulfur diesel. It's self-serve, open 24/7, and their pumps take all the major credit cards. Easy and convenient, day or night.
We thank Fort Site Fuel for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from CSG Consulting. Aisha, they help businesses and individuals build smart strategies using financial modeling and analysis. CSG assists with keeping an eye on performance, managing business dashboards, and analyzing budget differences. They also help adjust strategies and manage change, because what worked before might not work tomorrow. Their focus is on understanding all the moving parts in your operation to keep everything balanced and on track. You can learn more at csgconsulting.us or call 419-852-4049 or 614-551-4631. Thank you, CSG Consulting, for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
The Win on the Wabash Super Raffle, sponsored by the Fort Recovery Athletic Boosters, is now accepting applications for its 2026 Community Service Awards. At least 20 $1,000 awards will be presented to graduating high school seniors from Mercer, Auglaize, Dark, and Shelby counties in Ohio and Jay County in Indiana. Two top applicants will receive additional recognition and enhanced awards. These community service awards honor students who have shown a strong commitment to volunteerism and community service, regardless of their post-graduation plans. Applications can be found on the Win on the Wabash website, wowraffle.com, and must be submitted online by March 8th. Award recipients will be notified by March 31st, with awards presented April 13th in Fort Recovery. Submit your application now to be eligible for one of the 20 WOW Community Service Awards awarded to graduating high school seniors from several local counties this spring. Welcome back to Insight. We're talking with Steve Stone. We've talked about a whole bunch of stuff. Is there anything else that you think? What about fall or spring cleanup? Do we want to get all the leaves out of the beds?
Oh, for sure.
That had been there, kind of covering up the.
Yeah, I mean, with the winter that we've had and spring that we've had, I mean, the one thing that's been pretty consistent, it certainly hasn't been rain, but one thing that's been consistent since last fall is wind.
Yeah.
And so, you know, cleaning up leaves that have collected and drifted around the house and in your window wells and against the shrubs and against the house, you know, that's all stuff that needs to be cleaned up. It just leaves a home for critters, mice, voles, whatever. Also makes a nice spot for disease, decay organisms, disease, and insects to have a winter home. Well,
I have a cousin that swears that you should leave all of that stuff there because it's a home for the critters, for the for the butterfly things and all of that, which might be true, but
I'm not a big fan of mice, and I'm not a big fan of voles, and so I keep that pretty clean, tidy around the house to get rid of those things. And then, you know, again, ornamental grasses, if you haven't trimmed back your ornamental grasses, which a lot of people wait till spring, now's the time to do that. If you left some perennials standing from last fall, whether it's a coneflower, salvia sedum, you know, whatever, now's the time to trim all that stuff. The perennials, the herbaceous perennials, those are things that you want. And the ornamental grasses are definitely things that need to be trimmed back now. Like daylilies are actually starting to shoot up already. So if you didn't trim your daylilies back, you might just leave them go, because I've seen those things out up maybe an inch or two already because of the warmer temperatures.
Yeah.
And, you know, that a little bit of dead foliage around those isn't going to hurt anything. But the ornamental grasses actually are starting to green up already too, certain varieties. So trimming those back is a good time to do that. And like I said, if you haven't done your fruit trees, you need to get out there and get that done and get that first application on. We didn't talk about the dormant oil, horticultural oil application.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For your fruit trees, you want to get that horticultural oil on now. Great insecticide, you know, safe to use. It's not going to hurt anybody, but it will control a huge range of different types of insects.
Mm-hmm.
And so horticultural oil you can use on your fruit trees, you can use it on burning bushes, you can use it on a lot of different plants for insect control. And it will control overwintering adults. It controls eggs, larvae. It really is an easy, inexpensive application that's going to pay a lot of dividends.
Yep. So kind of to wrap stuff up, let's kind of go back to where we sort of started with the cold temperatures we're going to have next week, and kind of let people know what that is or is not going to do with their perennials and other things that have been there. Nobody's planted anything yet, I'm sure, but anything that's already growing, is what's that going to do with their landscaping, bushes, flowers, all that kind of stuff? Is that going to hurt anything?
Probably not going to have a huge effect, because there's only two nights that are going to be significantly cold. I think, and again, that could change by the time we get to next week, but right now, you know, they're calling for 16 degrees, I think, one night. 16 is pretty darn cold. I mean, that's a hard freeze.
Yeah.
But again, your flowering bulbs, your spring flowering bulbs are going to take that fine. Mm-hmm. The flowers that are completely in bloom might cause them a little bit more of an abbreviated bloom time.
But right now, crocus is the only thing I've seen.
That's the only thing I've seen blooming. Yeah. I've seen some daffodils that have some pretty big buds, but they haven't opened yet. And if they haven't opened yet, they'll be perfectly fine. So, you know, again, people get really worked up about that. But, I mean, in March, you know, we're still in pretty good shape. I mean, it's unusual to have, what, 3 days that were 70 to 75. That's fairly unusual. Yeah. But
so let's say it kills the crocus. Let's say it destroys the flowers. Those, you don't have to do anything with the bulbs. They'll be just fine.
The bulbs and the foliage are going to be perfectly fine.
Yep. It's not going to hurt. Don't worry about it.
It's not going to hurt them at all. Nope.
Yep. Anything else you want to kind of reiterate that we talked about?
Don't be too excited to get out there and start. I mean, again, with some nice days, some warm days, people get a little bit fired up, and, you know, don't get real excited to get your mulch down just yet. It's a little,
because then you're insulating the cold.
Yeah, you kind of insulate the cold.
Ground's already cold.
Yeah, you see that more in Columbus and Dayton and Cincinnati and Indianapolis. The big, huge companies will be out there mulching their big commercial projects right now. And I mean, ideally, you'd want to see another couple of weeks past or a few more warm days to get that temperature in the ground up before you put your new mulch down.
Yeah, but they get ahead of the schedule, those guys don't know what Steve Stone knows.
Well, I don't know how much Steve Stone knows.
Well, he sounds like he knows a lot. He's pretty sharp. So,
hey, could you let my wife know that?
She knows. She just doesn't want to let you know that she knows.
Okay, gotcha.
So, anything else you want to throw in?
That's it. Thanks, Neil. Sorry I was running behind.
Well, explain why you were behind, again, for people that tuned in a little late.
Well, my phone rang, and it was my greenhouse calling. telling me that
hey,
it was,
Dad, we're cold.
It's cold. It's cold.
And so you had to go get the pilot.
Hey, that's a great story that won't take very long. Our awesome, I'll mention our awesome sheriff right now. It was, I don't know, 20 years ago. Same thing happened, but it was like 2:00 in the morning. It's called Sensei phone. The computer calls me, says low temperature in greenhouse. So I jump in my truck and I'm flying out 49 and pass the sheriff going about 80, and he turns around, flips his lights on, pulls me over. It's at that time Deputy Timmerman.
Yep.
And I'm like, sir, I said, you can write me a ticket out. I know I'm speeding. Just write me a ticket out. I was right in front of like Schmidt's Fur Farm or past that.
Yeah.
And I said, write me a ticket. It's fine. Just meet me at Nature's Green. I got issues. And he's like, okay, just go ahead. I'll meet you out there. So I told him, and so I'm out there trying to get the pilot lit. And he comes in with a flashlight and a lighter and matches. He's, how can I help?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm good. I think I got him. I got both lit now. And he goes, well, you need anything? And I'm like, no, I'm pretty good. I said, I really appreciate it. He goes, well, I said, I didn't realize where you were going. He said, don't worry about it. And so you got to like the guy.
Yes. And that story doesn't surprise me even a little bit. That's Doug.
It's just funny. He's completely dressed, got his gun, got his belt, got everything on. And he's down trying to get underneath my heater with his flashlight. Hey, let me help you. How can I help you?
Yeah.
And
that's what sheriffs are supposed to do, help people.
Yeah, he was awesome.
And that's not surprising.
And I still remember that to this day. He was awesome.
And he probably remembers it too. I hope you voted for him.
Well, that's a dumb question.
Yeah. So, thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
And we'll be back with Sports Talk in...
So, as you know... Nature's Green's always been a big part of the gala.
Oh,
they always help us out, trees and decoration, and big supporters. And this weekend, we delivered, what was it, 8 or 10 checks to people in need. And we get to deliver, but for guys, the reason is because guys like Steve Stone.
Yep.
And me and Fee had a couple that was very emotional, and Bill and Jack had some, and And it just goes to show you, guys like Steve Stone in your community make you a winner.
Yep.
So it's all, we really appreciate.
And a lot of people chip in to help. And that things like that just make it a whole lot better. And that is very much appreciated.
Well, when you work with, you know, people like everybody that I'm sitting with up here.
Yeah.
I mean.
Even Rocker. Yeah.
I mean, when you work with people like the guys that run that, I mean, it makes it easy. Yeah. It makes it easy to help. It makes it fun and easy to want to donate. It just makes it worthwhile, because it's all of us. It's not just you know, it's not just one person.
Yep.
I mean, those guys, all the stuff they've, Bubba and Fee and Jack done and Bill. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable.
Yep. So, alrighty, we'll take a break here. Be back with Sports Talk right after this.
Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show is being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard.